This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Chris Wilkie, Executive Director of the Puget Soundkeeper Alliance. Chris Wilkie is here today to tell us about the work of the Puget Soundkeeper Alliance to protect and preserve the waters of Puget Sound. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks for having me here.
Why was the Puget Soundkeeper Alliance started? What is your history?
We were founded back in 1984. We were the first organization to focus exclusively on the health of Puget Sound, and primarily a focus on maintaining the water quality of Puget Sound. Our first action back in 1984 was to fight for secondary treatment at the West Point Sewage Treatment Plant, which treats most of the wastewater from the city of Seattle. And the plan at that time was to only have primary treatment, which is against what the EPA regulations were. But that was the plan that the county and the city were moving forward with. And we were able to get that corrected. And that plant is still cleaning the waters of Puget Sound today.
What is the current condition of Puget Sound?
The current condition, I would say it's really varied. I think there is a lot that we have to be proud of here. We have one of the only major metropolitan areas in the Northern Hemisphere where you can have a good chance of seeing orca whales. Last fall, I saw them right off of West Point, actually, a group of six orca whales. We have five different species of Pacific salmon. Gray whales come in here. We have harbor seals, sea lions. There's a lot of life that's here. We have a shellfish industry, which is very important. However, Puget Sound is suffering from the weight of our population, our industry, and just the 4 million people that live here. And we like to say all is not well beneath the surface. It looks beautiful, but there are some problems.
You've begun alluding to this, but what are the key threats to the health of Puget Sound?
We've identified, and what we focus on is the number one toxic threat to Puget Sound is polluted stormwater runoff. So this is the rain, snow melt every once in a while that runs off of our driveways and our rooftops and our roadways and our highways. And it contains more toxic pollutants than any other source. And because it's so large and has to do with all of our pavement that's everywhere, it's a really big deal. It's a big, big job to get a handle on, but it's going to be the key to protecting the waters of Puget Sound.
What are the additional threats?
Other threats that we are looking at, and you're absolutely right, you can't just focus only on one thing because there are other problems. Agricultural pollution, as you get outside of the urban areas, is a major threat. It contains pathogens like bacteria and excess nutrients and turbidity, and that's the number one source of pollution nationwide, and we have some issues here as well. Some of our most iconic salmon rivers, like the Skagit and the Snohomish system, are heavily impaired by agricultural pollution, and we've got to get a handle on that. We still have wastewater. We still have that sewage treatment that I mentioned. It's not removing all of the pollutants, particularly some of the more toxic stuff, so we have to get a handle on that. And some of our big industries as well. We have oil refineries here in Washington, BP, Shell, Tesoro, and some others, and there's pollution that comes out of those. And then increasingly, we have to fold in the effects of climate change. And there's an evil twin to climate change. It's called ocean acidification. And as there's more carbon in the atmosphere, the ocean absorbs that, and it turns the waters slightly more acidic every year. And it's getting to the point where it's hard for the smallest organisms to survive. And that's the base of the entire food chain. So we need to consider that as well.
Before we go into detail about specific programs, what is the approach of the Soundkeeper Alliance to improving the health of Puget Sound? What are your overall strategies?
One thing I think you should understand about Puget Soundkeeper is we are the local licensed waterkeeper organization in the Puget Sound area. And we're affiliated with the Waterkeeper Alliance, which we were a founding member of back in 1990. And the Waterkeeper Alliance started, we were program number six. It began with the Hudson River Keeper in New York, and now there's over 270 programs on six continents around the world. And each one of these groups, including our local Puget Sound Keeper, is a local affiliate that is a grassroots organization that's entirely supported by community donations. And we are advocates for the waterway, so we are willing to name names, and we are willing to track down and stop illegal pollution using the power of the Clean Water Act. And we also have a boat, and we're on the water to detect and document and bear witness to the problems of Puget Sound and use that awareness to correct those problems as we see them.
Would you tell us about your kayak patrols?
Yeah, so we're on the water on average about twice a week. We have a kayak patrol, usually every Wednesday here in the Seattle urban area. And as beautiful as some of the more natural areas of Puget Sound, as you expect, you do find more pollution in the urban areas. And so we're patrolling, looking for oil sheens or other evidences of pollution discharge. Occasionally we're taking water samples. And we're also cleaning up trash and solid debris that we find floating in the water, which is really important. And it's very instructive, and it gives people something that they can do. It's real popular with volunteers. We also have a motorized boat patrol every week. We go up the Duwamish River and other locations to find sources of pollution and get them stopped.
What is the most common thing to find on your boat patrols?
Well, I would say the most common thing to find is floating trash. There's a perception by some that the trash that we find, we get kind of used to seeing it in an urban area, that maybe it's just unsightly and it's not our biggest problem. But plastic pollution in particular presents a real water quality problem because it really never leaves the environment once it's out there. It just breaks into smaller and smaller pieces. And there's new evidence now that shows that it's actually getting in the food chain. So when we remove plastic pollution, we're actually cleaning the water. But another thing, sadly, that we find quite regularly are oil sheens and oil slicks. And there's a hotline number to report those to around the nation. It is 1-800-424-8802. Locally, it's 1-800-OILS-911. And we also have our own hotline, which is 1-800-42-PUGET. So there's three options for you. And it's really important to report these rainbow sheens that you see on the water, because the agencies that have the ability to respond and track down those sources, they won't know about it unless people call it in. So that's one of the things that we do, is we're actually out there, and when we see something, we report it, and quite often it can be tracked right back to the source, and we can get that source of pollution stopped.
Are there other types of pollution in addition to oil sheens that people should report if they happen to see them?
Yeah, I would say any visible discoloration of the water is worth reporting. No one's going to fault you for reporting something, even if there's no action that can be taken today on that. But to give you an example of something that happened a few years ago, and actually I think this has happened twice now, we got reports of sort of a cloudy, milky white discharge to the Lake Union area. And when we got the report, we called it into the City of Seattle's hotline, and they sent an inspector out. And one of the things that the cities do, they're really good at, is finding illegal connections from sewer lines to stormwater lines. And it takes quite a bit of sleuthing. In this case, they knocked on doors and flushed dye tabs down sinks and toilets, and then went down and checked the lake to see if the lake turned color. And when they finally found this, it was actually on the University of Washington property, and they found the connection from basically a bathroom straight into the lake. And I believe the university was fined or at least warned over that issue, and the problem was corrected. But if the passerby, who actually had been a volunteer of ours, hadn't taken the time to call that in, it still might be discharging today.
When people report the oil sheens, is there usually pretty good follow-up?
There is really good follow-up. The state agencies and the city agencies take those reports really seriously. They're often not able to clean it up. By the time you see a rainbow color on the water, it's too thin. It's only like one or two molecules thick. It's very hard to clean up. But it's still important to call that in, because we might be able to track down the source. It might be a boat bilge that is pumping or something like that on a somewhat regular basis. And if that doesn't get called in, they won't be able to track that down. Coast Guard is very active in tracking those down as well. And they'll board ships. The Coast Guard has the ability to board ships, and they can even fingerprint the oil and match it, kind of using forensic science. And they can see whose oil that was that's actually out there floating on the water and take action to correct it.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Chris Wilkie, Executive Director of the Puget Sound Keeper Alliance, a nonprofit that works to protect and preserve the waters of Puget Sound. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. In your legal actions to protect Puget Sound waters, you're using the citizen lawsuit provision in the Clean Water Act. Would you tell us about this provision?
Sure. Basically, the way the Clean Water Act was passed in 1972, there was an understanding that we couldn't just rely on local agencies and state agencies to enforce the Clean Water Act because they were often in the back pocket of the polluting industries. There was a lot of influence there, and it was really citizens that had the most at stake. So from the very beginning, the framers of the Clean Water Act included a citizen provision for citizen enforcement, basically to act as private attorneys general and bring cases in federal court to stop illegal pollution. Essentially, once it's identified, you serve a 60-day notice to the polluter, and they have 60 days to correct the problem. Otherwise, we'll see them in federal court, and we'll work out a solution there.
How have you used the Clean Water Act to protect Puget Sound? What are some of the lawsuits you have brought and the results?
Well, we've brought some pretty noteworthy ones, I think. Our largest settlement was against BNSF Railway for their rail yard between Queen Anne and Magnolia here in Seattle. It's about a 90-acre rail switching yard with a maintenance facility, and they have been polluting waters of Elliott Bay for years. And when we notified them about that, we couldn't get to a settlement right away. And the litigation ran on and it ran on. And it ended up being a $1.5 million settlement with the railway. They ended up putting in stormwater management systems to address that problem that they had. But also there was a financial settlement, which we don't keep any of that money. So it went to start a foundation, a fund really at a foundation called the Puget Sound Stewardship and Mitigation Fund. And that is going to pay for restoration projects in the watershed, basically to compensate the community for the damage that has occurred. And they must comply with the Clean Water Act moving forward. So the Clean Water Act itself allows for some pretty stiff penalties, up to $37,500 per day per occurrence. And that starts to add up. So there's a big incentive for companies that are interested in complying to get into compliance and not wait until somebody catches you polluting our waters.
Would you tell us about the recent action against Rainier Petroleum Corporation on Harbor Island?
Sure. Well, that was another case, a very similar case. A lot of people, when they talk about stormwater pollution, they call it non-point pollution. But actually, most cases, stormwater is a point source. And our industries are held to a very high standard here in Washington. They are required to comply with water quality standards with their discharges. Now, they are allowed a period of time. They're required to monitor their stormwater discharges. And if they're over the line, it's not an immediate violation, but they do have to take action to get themselves into compliance. And in this case, we had a facility which basically wasn't doing much monitoring at all. We lacked that information. And then after we entered litigation with them, they started to take samples, and then we saw that it was actually very highly polluted, particularly with heavy metals and things like that. So we were able to work out a settlement with them that had two important provisions. One is they are putting in a treatment system that is going to treat their stormwater and bring it into compliance with the Clean Water Act. But also there's another important provision for large above-ground storage tanks, and that is that needs to be sealed. It needs to provide containment if that tank should leak. And they're going to have to seal a berm around their tanks. So if there is a leak, these are pretty old tanks, about 82,000 gallons, and it'll have to be able to contain that full volume if there is a spill so that it doesn't go to Elliott Bay.
You mentioned the fund to fund local environmental projects. Mm-hmm. Would you say more about that and some examples of the projects that have been funded?
Yeah. So to date, we have awarded over $4 million to support third-party environmental benefit projects to essentially heal the damage to the watershed and compensate the community for damage to their waterways. And now that we've had some larger settlements, we have a little more sophisticated process for organizations to apply. It's through the Puget Sound Stewardship and Mitigation Fund, and there's a request for proposals and a local funding board. It's administered through the Rose Foundation for Communities and the Environment. So we're a little bit hands-off on who actually is awarded these funds, but it's basically with an eye towards benefiting water quality and habitat projects here in the Puget Sound watershed. And examples of projects that have occurred, there's water quality education projects, there's salmon habitat restoration in some of the rivers, there are stormwater education projects for businesses so they can understand what their requirements are. These are examples of things that are funded through that work.
Would you tell us about your efforts to prevent vessel pollution?
Vessel pollution comes in a lot of different forms, and it's increasingly receives more attention and more regulation. But the biggest worry is that we would see a major oil spill in Puget Sound someday. And we have not had a major oil spill on the scale of an Exxon Valdez or what we saw in the Gulf or even some recent ones. They had one in the Bay Area in the last 10 years. So we work really hard to make sure that the regulations and the preparedness and the response systems and the marine safety side of things are doing everything we can to prevent a major oil spill to Puget Sound. But that's the big one. That's the bad day for Puget Sound that we hope never comes. The one thing that we do know that happens is that there are hundreds and hundreds of small oil spills every year. And although some of them are land-based and some of them comes right off our roadways, there's a lot that takes place on the water as well. We've actually seen evidence of higher petroleum compounds in the water near areas where a lot of boats are moored. So we work on educational projects to help boaters, to provide them with supplies. Just last week, we were assisting Washington Sea Grant at the boat show, passing out free oil absorbs and spill kits for boaters. And then about in the last 10 or 11 years, we've been the statewide manager and we're the founding organization of the Clean Marina Washington program. And we've now certified 71 marinas along with our partners around the state. And basically these marinas, once they enter into the program, they submit to an environmental audit. And once they pass the test, then they earn the right to fly the flag. And it deals with not only the small spill potential, but also boat sewage, debris from boat maintenance activities, hazardous materials storage, and that sort of thing.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Chris Wilkie, Executive Director of the Puget Sound Keeper Alliance, a nonprofit that works to protect and preserve the waters of Puget Sound. In what ways have you helped prevent polluted stormwater runoff in Puget Sound?
One of the things that I'm most proud of is we helped rewrite the laws in Washington State, and I believe we have among the strongest and most protective stormwater regulations in the country or possibly in the world. And very noteworthy is a new statewide requirement, which is interesting. It's going into effect just this month in King County and in Seattle to require green stormwater infrastructure as we develop and redevelop land through the construction process. There's now a requirement that uses state-of-the-art stormwater management, which, interestingly enough, involves plants and permeable pavement that allows the water to soak right through the concrete or the asphalt, and it uses things like rain gardens and bioswales, and importantly, retaining native vegetation. And so we won this victory on a state appeal about 7 years ago, and it's taken this long for the requirements to kick in. And so we have a big project this year to help the cities and the counties, there's 83 of them in Western Washington, that are going to be implementing these new rules. And it's a big job to fix stormwater pollution. But one thing that we can't be doing is we can't be building out the old way. We have to build the new way. And it actually looks nicer, too, because you have more vegetated features on the landscape and that sort of thing. But it ends up being far cheaper to treat stormwater on site than it is to move it downstream through larger and larger pipes and then think about some point where you might do something with it before it just gets discharged straight into the bay.
In what ways are you involved in the fossil fuel transport issue? What are your current actions?
I would say there was something that kept me awake at night. This might be what it would be. There's an effort underway to turn the Pacific Northwest into a fossil fuel hub to the world. And it hasn't always been that way. Normally, the oil, for example, that we get here is just for our local consumption. But now that dynamic is being flipped. Some of those same terminals that we've had that have been receiving oil are now gearing up to export it. And with the Bakken oil fields in North Dakota, the developers of those fields who want to bring that product to market, they've got a problem. They've got their energy resources in the middle of the country, and the big areas where their buyers are will be in Asia. So then they need a way to get it off of the continent. And we think it would be a very bad thing for Puget Sound to start seeing large amounts of that oil flowing the other direction. It's increasing the risk of a catastrophic spill here in Puget Sound. So that's a serious issue. And then at the same time, we're also seeing LNG, liquefied natural gas proposals. And we have the proposal right now for the nation's largest coal export facility from the shores of Puget Sound, which would be 48 million tons of coal per year. The scale of this coal export terminal is so massive, this proposed export terminal, that it would actually equal the entire carbon footprint of the entire state of Washington. I've already mentioned that climate change is really impacting Puget Sound in a lot of different ways, including our acidifying waters. And we have a responsibility to do what we can here locally to prevent these crazy fossil fuel projects that we don't need, that aren't going to create many jobs, from exporting this pollution to the world. And so that's a big deal for both Puget Sound and the world's climate. And then associated with that, there's the problem of the railways. And as I mentioned, these fossil fuel reserves are in the middle of the continent, and we don't have the pipelines or other ways of getting those fossil fuels to these terminals, so they come on the rail. And we've seen rail disasters around the country, incredibly disastrous. And the coal shipments that are currently coming through on their way to Canada, these trains are bleeding coal, and it's actually getting in the waterways as the coal is transported. So we do have a lawsuit to get that stopped because there's no permit to discharge coal to our waterways. And I'm proud to say that we are joined on this lawsuit by all four water keepers in Washington State. So we have a Spokane River Keeper, a Columbia River Keeper, and a North Sound Bay Keeper, as well as the Sierra Club and the National Resources Defense Council. And this is to get that pollution of coal stopped, that it's ending up in our rivers and along our shorelines into the waterways. So that case is proceeding. We have a hearing towards the end of this year. And we have a number of other cases that are proceeding right now. We have one with the cruise terminal on the Seattle waterfront, as well as the large grain terminal that's there, and some other industrial facilities around our area.
I noticed on your website there was also mention of neglected rail bridges.
Yeah, well, that gets to this issue of the transport of crude oil. These trains are called unit trains, and they can be 100 cars long. Each car represents about 28,000 gallons of crude oil. And the Bakken crude, the stuff that's coming off of the fields of North Dakota, is highly volatile. It's more volatile than gasoline. It's very unusual for crude oil. And these trains, they have a propensity to explode and burn when they derail. So it's very dangerous, and it creates oil discharge to our waterways, which is also why we're concerned. And it's being looked at, but we're really watchdogging the state. The state can only do so much. That's one of the most frustrating things. You asked about the rail bridges. What we did is we did a study with our water keepers around the country, and we identified 250 rail bridges, and 43% of them were showing signs of crumbling infrastructure. There was cracked footings. There was heavily rusted metal. There was rotting wood. And the engineering records for these rail bridges, they're privately owned. We can't even access, we can't even have our engineers look at those designs and see when the last time they were inspected. So we think that it warrants very close scrutiny, especially since so much is at stake. If one oil by rail train that goes off the tracks and explodes and burns can cause severe loss of life and severe damage to the waterways.
Where does Puget Sound Keeper Alliance plan to focus its efforts in the future?
Well, we are going to keep doing what we're doing. The biggest thing that we are focusing on right now is building the community voice. Every American has a right to clean water. It's been declared by the UN as a universal right that every citizen of planet Earth has a right to clean water. In our case, the Clean Water Act ensures that. And we want to activate the citizens and get people to stand up for positive change. Some of this work that we need to do, particularly on stormwater, is going to require large amounts of public investment. And people need to understand what's at stake. And if we can all come together and look at the amount of investment that we need to clean our waters from toxic stormwater pollution, for example, we will see our salmon come back. And that will benefit our orca whales. And right now, our state fish, the steelhead trout, you can't hardly fish for them anymore except for some isolated hatchery population. Chinook salmon in Puget Sound, a world-famous fish, is closed for most of the year. And when we do catch it, we have to think about if there's any toxics in it and how much of that fish we should eat over the course of a year. So these are things that have been taken from us, maybe not on purpose, but it was the old way of doing things. If we can bring clean water back to Puget Sound, we will restore some of these resources that we can all enjoy.
What volunteer opportunities are available?
Well, we have volunteer opportunities every week at Puget Sound Keeper. We have our kayak patrols and our boat patrols on a regular basis. They just need to contact our office at PugetSoundKeeper.org. You can sign up online. And then we have larger volunteer events throughout the year, large-scale beach and waterway cleanups. And it's coming up on Earth Day, and that's our busiest month in both April and May for volunteer cleanup.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I would say it's important to get activated. It's important to find out what you can do. The information about simple things that we can all do in our daily lives is readily available. Picking up your dog poop and not washing your car on the street, taking it to a professional car wash. And that's all really important. But there are bigger things, too, that people need to be aware of. And they need to find out what's happening in their local utilities with stormwater drainage policies and support the agency and rulemaking decision makers that are trying to do the right thing. They need the public support.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Chris.
Thank you.
You are just listening to Chris Wilkie, Executive Director of the Puget Soundkeeper Alliance. For more information, check on the web at PugetSoundKeeper.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at KEXP.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to KEXP.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on KEXP.org.